Hello and welcome to Club Reset. It's been a while, sorry for the break, but we're back now, just in time for Christmas. And it's an extra special episode because this week I am doing a crossover pod with the wonderful Betamax Babylon, the greatest retro movie podcast in the world. Something that I am a semi-detached sort of part of, I suppose, or was once upon a time.
But, you're still part of.
I feel myself as part of the family. And the two fantastic hosts of that pod are with me now, Bruce Ackland, who's of course been on the Club Reset several times before. Hello, cousin.
Hello, cousin. How are you?
I'm all right, thanks, mate. And making his debut on the Reset, but obviously regular voice on Beatmax Babylon, is James Upright. And I should also say, James Upright, the mastermind and design guru behind all of the Reset's branding as well. So if you like our beautiful graphic design and branding, then he's the man to congratulate. Yeah. Thanks for joining us, James.
Hello, thanks for having me.
We've both got Santa hats on. Bruce is upside down.
No, Bruce. I didn't get the memo.
Never mind. It doesn't matter, mate.
I don't know about, do you find this actually, Sam, that if you wear like a hat, you know, we're both bald men.
Yeah.
And when you have a hat on, it's nice because you lose a lot of heat through your head. Everyone knows that.
Yeah.
But do you find that after a while, your brain starts going, hold on a minute, this head is never usually this warm. What the fuck's going on? And it starts making me go a bit, ugh.
I haven't found that, but I found that the opposite. I found that since, I was working out the other day, I think I've been bald for like 12 years and like fully bald, you know, and I've become addicted to hats. I'm sort of never, you know, you get those people who describe themselves as never nudes, right? They'll always have pants on, right? Minimum. That's how I feel about my head. Like you get so used to framing your face with a hat that when I'm not, don't have a hat. Like I'll wear my baseball cap in the I'll get changed into my loungewear in the evening, just watching telly or whatever. I'll still have my hat on.
Brilliant. I don't like it. Love it.
I haven't started wearing it in bed yet, although I have when it's been really cold in the past, worn a woolly hat in bed. That's quite nice.
Get one of those Scrooge. They made a lot of sense, didn't they?
Because of course they did. Yeah, hat in bed makes perfect sense.
I like hats myself. Yeah, I like hats myself. I think sometimes
you've usually got your Blue Jays hat on, mate.
Maple Leafs.
Oh, sorry. Oh,
yeah. No, Toronto. No. They're our sister baseball team. So that's okay.
God, thank God.
I think they look better if you don't have any hair.
But you,
if you wear hats and you've got hair, you're some sort of cunt.
That's get easier.
What sort of cunt has to do that?
Yeah.
But you know, when you wear a hat, Bruce, it looks good on your head, but I look really awful in hats. So when my hair eventually goes, then I've got a situation. I might have to get a wig.
No, you're off to Turkey, mate, when that happens. Yeah. Hair plugs. Yeah. Get yourself a Wayne Rooney.
Take it off from my chin and just whack it on my head.
So I thought, because this is a crossover with your wonderful movie podcast, we'd talk about the role that movies play in our mental health, because music and books, people always talk about that. You know, there's probably old podcasts dedicated to it. You know, the relationship between music and mental health, literature and mental health. But of course, all culture and art is fantastic for your mental health. It's like the main thing alongside, I guess, football that is an outlet for me or a comfort for me. And movies are just a bigger part. So I wanted to talk about some films, or Bruce might fill us in on some films that sort of are great portrayals of mental health, but also just like the comfort movies or the movies that have helped you when you're just feeling like you need a bit of comfort or you just need a distraction. James, do movies play that sort of role in your life at all?
Oh God, absolutely. I mean, I think a lot of it stems from childhood movies and movies that you loved as a kid. I think they're always the comfort movies, aren't they? So Star Wars, Indiana Jones, I think are the first things that leap into my mind. But yeah, always, if you need that little moment where you think, I don't want to watch anything else but The Empire Strikes Back, because that's going to give me that, you know, takes you right back to your childhood.
Conjure it, in it.
Yeah, it immediately you're back there. You got, and I've got all the toys in my house as well still.
So then you play it afterwards.
So I'm sitting there going, they're torn, you know. But yeah, no, absolutely. And Raiders, I mean, anything with Harrison Ford in, let's face it.
Yeah.
There's a very real mental reason for that, though, isn't there? Because I always think that that desire, that thing where you're drawn towards films, they don't even necessarily have to be kids' films. They're just films that you saw as a kid. I'm not a big fan of children's films, really. I wouldn't call Star Wars, Indiana Jones children's films. They're just films, you know, and that everyone likes and whatever. But there's a good mental reason for it, isn't it? Because it's about, it is the conduit to childhood, and it's the conduit to a time in which you don't have responsibilities like
there's
you do
nothing
now.
To worry about.
Because the worst thing about getting older is all these responsibilities you pick up, isn't it?
Yeah.
As you get older. And as a child, you fucking didn't have any responsibilities. You were just fucking, you were lording it around the earth, weren't you?
Yeah, No,
and that's what it is. Right. It's a desire for no responsibility. And that's the warmth, really.
Yeah, and that sort of way of like, you know, people always talk about meditation, don't they, when they talk about anxiety. So have you tried meditation?
Mm.
I never quite mastered it, but to be fair, probably haven't given it enough of a good crack, right? Yeah. But I see little forms of like meditation light in a lot of other things that I do.
Mm.
And sometimes watching a film that you've seen a million times before that you love and also has all those connotations to do with childhood and a time in which you were more at peace and you felt less encumbered by the fucking bullshit of life, right?
Yeah.
In some ways, watching a film like that is like meditation. And one of the reasons is, it doesn't require concentration because it's a film that you're so familiar with.
You're so familiar, absolutely.
And,
yeah.
And you can just watch it and it almost washes over you. Do you know what I mean? And I see those kind of films, definitely the ones you've mentioned, James. Back to the Future would be another one.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my favourite one, which we always talk about, Trading Places. Mm-hmm. There's certain films like that where you just can put it on and it can let you drift away because, you know, the real Zen master Buddhists would say you've got to be able to sit quietly in a room on your own with nothing other than your own thoughts and be cool with that. And I see that as a wonderful aspiration. And who knows, maybe one day I'll achieve it. But I'm not quite there yet. But until I am, being able to sit on my own with a film that I've seen before and just kind of, it completely lighten the load and distract my brain away from all of the other little things that are making me anxious, then it really works. It's one of the best things.
You've opened a bit of a door there because I was thinking about when you said about doing this podcast, I've got a film that and it actually ties into what I had a conversation with someone once about like anxiety and sleep and when you've got lots of work and the difficulty that can have with you being able to sleep and that. And I've got a comfort film, which is some people might think is an unusual one, which is All the President's Men. The great, the masterpiece,
you
All the President's Men.
Because I watched that last week.
Did you really? Yeah. So I have watched, here's the thing, and it actually ties into something that experts will say, it's what you're saying, right?
Mm.
The thing about All the President's Men, what is a comfort film for me? First of all, it's a great movie. Yeah, I've seen it hundreds of times. I know every line of dialogue in that film, right? But here's the thing. It's very immersive and it gives your brain something to do because you have to follow, because you're following this chain of clues and with Woodward and Bernstein. But because you've seen it lots of times, you're not like, your brain isn't like following it like fresh and trying to, you know, like it would be the first time you see it sort of thing, right? And so I find it like a tremendous comfort film, but it's for the reason, very much the reason you said, right? It's because it's actually not a good thing to empty your head, right? And this is what this guy told me that I was at a conference with, and we were talking about it. And he said, when you can't sleep, and this is where a film like that sort of comes into play in what you're saying. We've all done it, haven't we? Laying in bed, can't get to sleep, we've got a lot on work, whether we're anxious or whether we're just very, very busy, and you can't switch off. That's what people say, isn't it? You're in bed, I can't switch off. And you try and clear your mind. Right, I'm going to concentrate. on just not fucking thinking about anything, which is a ridiculous concept, right? Mm. But he said, you don't want to do that. You want to occupy your brain, the comfort here, but not with anything challenging, which is kind of what you're saying about watching something. Yeah. And he said the best way, this is where counting sheep comes on, yeah? You're occupying your brain, but with something quite mundane that's just keeping it ticking over, so all that other shit isn't coming in. And he said to me, the best thing to do if you can't sleep at night and you're thinking about things you're anxious is to count down from 100, 100, 99, 98, 97. And he said by a certain number, you will definitely be asleep because it's occupying your brain so that the other stuff isn't coming in, but it's not changing it so that it's working.
Yeah.
Hard. Yeah. And I think that's how something like All the President's Men or Back to the Future, like you're saying, works. Because if you're watching it for the first time, even like something like Back to the Future, you're really having to concentrate, aren't you, rather? Because it's kind of, do you know
back
what I mean?
Back and forth but, along the timeline, yeah.
When you've seen it millions of times, it's still kind of occupying your brain because your brain's thinking about it, but it's not overworking. So that's what it is.
Yeah, it's like a jigsaw puzzle, but one you've done a couple of times before. So you still have to get it together, but, you know, it takes a bit less time. No, I totally agree with that. And it's a technique that I've used, not the counting, but I have certain things, like repetitive, sort of almost mundane things that I think about in bed when I need to get to sleep. I never try to clear my mind. I try to focus on one thing that's relatively mundane. And it seems to help.
Yeah, like whether it might be like cleaning out the cupboard or something and replaying the last time you cleaned out or whatever.
I've got one of them. One of those that I do is that if I'm lying in bed like that and I'm trying to get off, to sleep. I'll lie in bed and I will try and remember all the beds that I've had in my life.
Oh, that's a good one.
All the houses that I've lived in. So you can lie on your back, close your eyes and think, right, what was my childhood bed? Mm. And you imagine the layout of the room and where the door was and where they were.
That is a good one.
And then you just try and work through all of the beds that you've had in your life.
That is a good one because you're giving your brain a task, but it's not a stressful one.
But it's
one.
Quite nice and nostalgic. And
yeah,
it's quite happy.
Yeah, it's nice. Yeah. Right.
Do not, if the one big message from this podcast is going to be, do not get into that clear your mind bullshit.
Do not meditate.
Okay. First of all, it can't be done. I don't care who you are. Right. Yeah. And well, it's just not a good idea.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not an expert, but I have, you know, whenever I've looked in, for instance, transcendental meditation, right, which some people swear by. I know some people who reckon that's changed their life completely, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. But even that, you have a mantra.
Exactly.
You have a mantra. One, transcendental meditation.
Yeah, what do you have to do for that?
I don't know. But it's just a form of committed meditation
as a life, as a sort of...
I've heard the term, but I can't remember.
As a sort of pillar of your life.
Yeah.
It's like, what we're talking about is like the bit in Ghostbusters, isn't it, where they say... choose the destroyer at the top of the building, and it's like, oh, you know, whoever you, the first thing that pops into your head is what's going to come and kill us, you know.
So if
Bill Murray, I think it says, so if we think of J. Edgar Hoover,
J.
Edgar Hoover will appear and kill us, right? And so he says, right, empty your mind. And even when I was a little kid first watching Ghostbusters in the cinema, I remember sitting there thinking, you can't do that, it's impossible to keep your mind, certainly not for more than a second or two.
Yeah.
They're going to be able to do that.
As soon as you say into your mind, you think of something, don't you?
You've got to. So what Dan Aykroyd does, even though he gets himself in trouble for doing it, is actually quite right. Because what he says in that is that I thought of the most benevolent thing I possibly could from my childhood.
Yeah.
Which is exactly what we're basically talking about, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
So it's kind of. So there we are.
I think you're right. I think the thing is, I suppose meditation can come in many different forms. And even the word meditation is off putting to a lot of blokes in particular. They think, oh, fucking.
That's all that bollocks, mate.
That's all that fucking hippie bollocks, isn't it? Or yeah. I'm like fucking Buddha up a fucking mountain floating cross-legged, right? Yeah. But the thing is, you can look at it in a number of different ways. And, you know, we've described how literally sticking on fucking Raiders of the Lost Ark can be a form of meditation.
Yeah,
I play FIFA. I am convinced that is a form of meditation.
Because you escape into it. It's so immersive.
My mind, I'm awake, but my mind is just in one place.
The game.
Just one place that it is. I used to I sometimes feel like that when I go to watch football in a stadium, is that like all of your focus is on one thing. And if you can do that, and it might be a record, it might be writing a reading a book or whatever it is. And some people, it's creative, isn't it? Some people, like, you know, you're an artist, James. I'm sure, like, you know, when you're being creative and drawing or designing or whatever, that in itself can be meditative because it has to focus all of your attention in one place.
I agree. Yeah. When you're doing a thing that you love, and even if it's for work, it helps. But yeah, if you're doing a thing that you love, and, you know, if I get booked in to do some illustration work, I remember once I got a job, it was doing the illustrations for Judy Murray's tennis book. She had this book out for kids. and there was it was like a massive book, and it had loads of illustrations in it. And I had like 2 weeks to do it, and I had to knock out all of these little sketches of these kids doing the stuff. And I was like, fucking hell. And I took it on. I was like, yeah, I'll do it. You know, like I always do when you're freelance and you say yes and then you work it out later. I was like, yeah, really, no problem. No worries. I can do that. But then it just meant that I was at home on my own for 2 weeks doing essentially little illustrations and cartoons, which is what I love to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was a real zone. It did. It helped sort of zone me out. And it was, in a way, quite a calming experience because I knew what to do. I knew how to do it. You know, a lot of situations you enter where you're thinking, I've said yes to this, but I'm not sure if I can do it.
Yeah,
but
and then there's a stress.
I knew I could handle it.
I've been doing, these last few months, I've been writing health features, right, for the newspaper. And my first job was writing health features for a health magazine when I was first a journalist many years ago. Yeah. And in recent years, I haven't been doing that kind of writing at all. You know, I've been writing books or writing funny columns or whatever. But, you know, a very kind of straightforward, thorough piece of journalism where you interview experts, look at some data, pull together facts and figures, and then turn it into a feature. Not, you know, not hugely colourful, not much of a sort of scope to sort of, you know, be funny or show your own personalised style, right? So there was a lot of years in my career where I thought, well, I don't do that sort of stuff anymore. That's behind me. Yeah. So for whatever reason, I've started getting offered a lot of that work again this year. And I started to do it. I did a couple and I thought it's a bit dry doing this. But it's very similar to what you're describing. It's much less creative than what you do, James. But it was sort of like I had this muscle memory of how to pull together a feature, you'll know, Bruce, it's very much putting together a case in a way. It's like being a detective. You get given a subject interview all these different, you have to track down various individuals, interview them, correlate all of these facts against what people have said, put it all together, create balance. And I suddenly started to get this real buzz out of it. And so I started saying yes to more and more. And I said to my wife, it's really weird. I've gone back to doing the sort of stuff that I was doing 25 years ago when I started out. And I said, but it's really weird. It's given me this sort of strange sense of calm that I haven't got out of work in years. And she said, because it's given you complete focus on something that you know you can do.
Yes.
And it's interesting because you learn when you write those kind of things, you're actually learning yourself on the job sort of thing. You'll learn about a new subject. But it's that thing where it's like your body and your brain goes into a sort of a rhythm that it's already familiar with. And the other thing was I got a thrill out of the fact that I still knew how to do it. You know, like riding a bike or swimming or whatever these things you do, and suddenly your body just remembers, even though you haven't done it for years. I started doing this. And I kind of remembered the principles and the basics that I'd learned when I was in my early 20s. And it's similar. It's just like there's something about, I don't want to say it's mundane because that's mean. I feel lucky to have that sort of work to do, to be honest. But it is sort of mundane. There's sort of a routine to it that I find really pleasing and fulfilling from a mental health point of view, you know.
But also it is nourishing your brain a little bit. Because it's getting it to work those areas of the brain you haven't used in a while. And you know, as you say yourself, a lot of what you've done over that period has been talking bollocks. And recording it, right?
Absolutely.
And in a weird way, you've probably gotten a bit your brain probably has been, large parts of your brain have probably been switched off a lot
neglected.
For quite a while.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
So doing that, your brain's probably enjoying it, enjoying that.
You're
comfortable, you're doing it. So it's not like, oh God, I'm stressed. How am I ever going to finish this? Or anything like that. But you're comfortable with it, but it is a challenge. You know, it's
only you've got to learn a subject. I've been given some of the funniest subjects. Like, I'm not joking, right? I got asked to write a feature about erectile dysfunction, right?
Beautiful.
And I said,
because you're an expert.
Oh, well, exactly. That was like, when I told people, I found the process of writing and researching this particular article one of the most interesting things I've done all year. I learned things about the willy, right?
Yeah.
That I was utterly surprised, stunned, shocked, and really? Very often amused, right? And I was like, I thought it'd be straightforward. I thought it'd be like, yeah, you can't get it up, take a pill, bang. That's the end of the feature. Here's my invoice. No. I won't go into it all now, but there's like, it was really interesting. And I remember saying to one of my brothers, I said to my brother Dom, I said, you wouldn't believe this article. I've been writing this article about erectile dysfunction. And the reason I told him is I wanted to tell him about the maddest thing I'd learned, which was about a particular penis implant that is available on the NHS, right? Which I won't, it will get completely sidetracked if I tell you about it now. Yeah. But I'm telling him,
That's not the one you pump it up, is it?
Yeah, it's the pump one, mate. Unbelievable. You know about it. I didn't. It was incredible. So So I'm out with two of my brothers and my sister. And you know what it's like. You're all catching up. We're out having dinner. It's like, what you been up to? Blah, blah, blah. And then it's my turn. I go, well, I've actually been writing a really interesting article about erectile dysfunction. And first of all, I think they thought I was taking the piss because they thought, well, he doesn't really write features like that anymore.
Right.
So first of all, he must be making this up for a joke. And then when they realised it wasn't and I was serious, one of my brothers was just like, but he wasn't being mean, but he was just like, I don't understand why he did that. It wasn't your idea. I said, no, it wasn't my idea. So the paper offered you. I went, yeah, but why would you do that? And I went, well, what else am I going to do? I said, you know, I write for a living. They've asked me to write about it. I said, I've spent a week learning loads of interesting stuff from some of the top doctors and professors in their field, in the world, like, you know, about a subject that I knew very little about. And now I know a lot about. And I found that really interesting and fulfilling and at times very entertaining as well.
Yeah,
I said, you know, I could sit and just write, you know, the same old bullets I always write, which I also find enjoyable. But it's like, I said, it's just like, you know, and last week they said, would you write an article about gout? And I was like, yeah, sure. And again,
fucking would I?
A week. Oh, yeah. Oh, I was like, straight away, gout. You're like, to me, I'm like, straight away, that's a funny disorder. Everyone finds gout funny. Now I'm going to get to the bottom of exactly what the fuck it is.
It's the high living disease.
Yeah, because it was Henry VIII.
You've had too much champagne.
The disease of kings.
Yeah.
Because Henry VIII had it, but apparently, as I now know, that's not the case.
I can see where they went for you for the erectile dysfunction or whatever thing.
And gout.
Because you've got into sort of men's sort of health.
Yeah, that's where all this stuff
comes from. So it makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah,
it does make sense.
It is completely.
What's up with my other cousins? Are they not following your career or something?
They couldn't put it together. He just thought, I mean, you've got to understand as well, my brothers are from a different generation, right? There's a much bigger gap between me and them than there is between you and I, right?
Yeah.
And they're from a generation that is still much more like our fathers, where it's like they've been very supportive of all this writing I've done in recent years about mental health. And, of course, I'm very conscious of the fact it affects them too, because I've written about our life growing up and they've been very cool about it, no complaints, very supportive. But I do think that they remain slightly confused by the willingness to show any vulnerability or show any weakness or share problems, because they're just like, why would you do that? And everyone will know.
Yeah.
And I'm like, but that's the point. I want everyone to know, but why would you want everyone to know? Well, because you just normalize this shit and then people feel a little bit less ashamed about their own shit. And plus, to be honest, it helps get it off my chest. Now, I'm not saying everyone should do that, of course.
Maybe they were worried you was going to say, and you know, so obviously I usually use an example, Cass.
Of my brothers over the years have suffered with iffy penises. Yeah, they wouldn't put that past. I think every time I say I've written something about you know, a new book or whatever, they do all hold their breath, which I understand. Because if the shoe was on the other foot, I would too. But, you know, they've like I say, they've been very understanding. But yeah, yeah. Well, all I'm saying is that, yeah, I think you're right. I think, you know, I've learned that. I'm 49 next year and I've learned, and, you know, I've done a couple of courses these last year or two as well in counselling and whatnot. And I think you're totally right, Bruce. It's really good for your mental health to remember to use certain part of your brains that might have been lying dormant, because nourishing is the word you used. I think that's really true. And it's not like, oh, because now I'm really clever and know loads of stuff. It's just about using your brain. It's like using a bit that you can go, you can fall into for years just not using. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And it just helps you, I think. It helps balance.
It's like all those. It's like all those RAPs that all sit and religiously watch Countdown, don't they?
Because
they do a Sudoku or something like that, because
they want to hit, you know.
The one thing I was going to say about movies and you, Bruce, just lastly, is that, like I said at the beginning, you know, music is a lot, it helps a lot of people, and it's very common for people to say, well, when I'm feeling down or when I'm feeling stressed, I always put on this record or this album, it always chills me out. Films aren't quite the same for me. Especially as I get older, my attention span, like so many of us, is fucked. I very often can't fucking engage in a movie like fully, you know, unless it grabs me very quickly. And I have to be in the right mood for a movie. That's the key thing. I have to be in the right mood to sit down and watch a movie. You are the only person I know who uses movies like most people use music. Like, I admit, you can put a movie on no matter what your mood is, and you'll know what movie to put on, and you'll fully engage in it. Which I think is a real blessing that you've got.
And I think you're right. It actually annoys me sometimes that movies are put on a different, which I think is really weird, but for some reason they're put on a, almost sometimes it's like, I almost get a sense that it's kind of a bit like people bestow additional gravitas on music and books, you know. I always put that on if I'm feeling, do you know what I mean? I reread that if you know, and like if you listen say a film and it's
Beethoven.
Like I firmly believe that whether people know they're doing it or not, they are all doing it.
I do think they are.
I just think they don't sorry, James, you used to talk about Trading Places, you know, earlier. You mentioned Trading Places as it's like a comfort film, which I watched last night, obviously. What I usually do is send Sam a screenshot, a photograph of me Trading Places.
While I was watching, exactly the same time, I was watching Home Alone, absolutely loving it,
And so I was watching Trading Places last night, and it's the Trading Places to me, I have a particular position in my calendar for Christmas where that's one of my sort of films where I really feel like, you know, there's this is Christmas is fully kicked off now, you know. And the other thing is, because as we said before about how you've seen it a lot of times, you know it all, of course it's such a brilliant film, it's still very funny even though you've seen it so many times and what have you. But little things just make, additional things make you chuckle, even if they're in your own head, you know. Like there's a bit in Trading Places that made me chuckle to myself last night where when Dan Aykroyd's character has been just figured out what's going on, what's being done to him. And there's him. He wakes up in his bed, doesn't he? Thinking it's all a dream, but it isn't. And he wakes up and in the room is Denham Elliot, Eddie Murphy, who he first attacks because he thinks, you know, it's all your fault.
What's that? And jokes. Yeah.
You're a dead man, but no. and Jamie Lee Curtis, And then there's a doctor there. And the doctor says, well, it was close, but he's going to be fine. And bear in mind, obviously, people know Trent. Jamie Lee Curtis is almost iconically sexy in this film. There's a bit where the doctor says, well, it was close, he's going to be fine, but he needs to just avoid excitement for a while. And immediately in my head, I thought to myself, get Jamie Lee Curtis out of that fucking room. Get her into the next city or country or something. But yeah, it's that's the other thing. You kind of, you build up new memories around it as well.
That's true. Do you watch, you know, when people listen to, like, if they're feeling a bit low, they might purposefully put on some low music, something a bit melancholy and something, and just to sort of wallow a bit in that mood.
Yeah.
You do that with movies. Do you, like, if you're feeling a bit kind of low, do you put on a movie, like, something really depressing to sort of match your mood? Or do you do the opposite? Do you put a movie on that's really uplifting to try and sort of lift you out? Or does it not work that way?
All I can say is there's definite zones I get into. Like, I get into weird zones, and I must admit, I do think about it. So I think, why have I been... So sometimes I'll have a little zone where all I want to do is watch, like, political thrillers, you know, like from the 80s and 90s. So things like, you know, like Costa Gavras films, do you know what I mean? And stuff like that. And they're like really long and dense, but brilliant. And I think that's almost like I'm looking to challenge my brain. Do you know what I mean? So there must be a reason for that. Sometimes I get into little zones where I just want to watch foreign films, longest foreign film. So yeah, there must be something going on there that's making me say this is what I want to watch.
To music. I mean, I know I do, and I'm sure most people go through phases the same thing. We can only listen to one genre or sometimes one artist.
Or one album over and over.
Yeah, and like it lasts for a while and then it just bang, ends as quickly as it gone. Began.
So yeah, it is weird, isn't it?
Funnily enough, you know, I think the reason I was watching all the President's Men was like, you know, for Beatmax Babylon, when you were away recently, James, we watched The Exorcist.
Yes.
And when I watched The Exorcist, I think I said to you on the podcast, Bruce, oh yeah, sometimes I watch a film from the 70s and think, why do I ever watch films from any other decade? Mm-hmm. Right? Because 70s films are so superior.
Yeah.
And so then I just sort of got into a thing where I just wanted to watch. I think I watched both The Godfathers and then I watched all The President's Men. And you just want to watch these films where there's the confidence of the filmmaker to just leave long silences.
Hey, can I give you one that I think you should watch, and that, because I don't think you've seen it, 3 Days of the Condor.
I haven't seen it, but I've always wanted
Redford,
to see it.
Robert Redford, CIA.
My God.
That is an incredible movie. You'll love that.
Yeah, yeah.
And then right after that, watch Christmas Evil.
and is Christmas Evil what...
That's our final Christmas offering.
Next. And am I right in thinking you're recording that episode straight after this?
We are. We'll be fresh from it. Well, warmed up.
What better time?
I actually watched it in my virtual reality cinema using this here headset that I'm holding up in front of you.
Oh, wow. Do you know about this? James has a headset where it makes it look like you're in the cinema, and you can even pick what type of cinema, whether it's an old one.
It's absolutely mental, honestly.
And can you watch any film like that on a streaming service? There's
different apps. There's one app that I use called Big Screen, which enables you to access your... anything on YouTube, anything on Disney Plus and Amazon Prime at the moment, they're the only ones that you can link up. But I'll make a little video of it.
And that's just your phone in that mask, is it?
No. It's a proper headset. It's like a proper 3D.
It's a VR headset.
VR headset.
Was it very expensive?
Well, that's the old one. That's the Quest 2, which is a couple of years old now. It was about £299. But it links wirelessly to the internet, so you can just sit on the couch.
So you can walk around, but where do you tend to sit when you're watching this?
Oh, I'm just on the couch. But when you're on the couch and you put it on, it's like you're in this massive IMAX cinema.
Oh my God, this is sensational.
It sounds a bit like the you know, in the notorious Star Wars Holiday Special? The weird bit where Chewbacca's dad is looking into his wank bank, personal wank bank, and there's a dance.
It's just like that.
there's sexy Wookiees in it.
No, it's like a dance. You know, that kind of dance you get in Star Wars films.
They are sexy.
Chewbacca's dad says, "Hey, what are you doing, Dad?" And it's Chewbacca's dad. And he's basically sitting there with what would be nowadays a VR headset. Yeah. And it's basically like a VR wank bank. This is true. It's in there.
I've never seen the holiday special. I'm not making this up, am I?
No, you're not making it up.
Well, nothing was surprising from what I've heard about it. I mean, I think, you know, all bets are off, aren't they? But maybe it's time for me to actually watch it. I know it's streaming somewhere.
It's on YouTube. It's not very good quality. Because the whole thing is there. And if you reach the end, then you get some sort of award.
Nobel Prize, I think.
That's my afternoon sorted, chaps. Listen, I'll leave you to record, what's it called again?
Christmas Evil.
Yeah, and I'll tune in with great interest and put all the links to Beatmax Babylon in my show notes. Lads, it's been an honour and a privilege to have this special mashup episode. I hope you've enjoyed it as much as I have. And great recommendations, I hope, for people listening as well. And just remember, as Bruce says, you cannot clear your mind, so stop trying.
That's exactly right.
Cheers. Merry Christmas, everyone. And Merry Christmas, Jason Bruce. Christmas. Cheers.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.